So Murijan Prabhu here gives a connection between the second and the third chapters that Krishna has told Arjuna that he should keep all abominable activities far distant by bhuti yoga. And then since Arjuna appears to be taking here the meaning of buddhi just to mean intelligence, then he thinks that this a problem comes up, because he's telling him to work, to fight, which seems to be doing an abominable activity, and by intelligence you can understand it's better not to do that. So then naturally then he feels that the instruction seems to be contradictory. So that opens the third chapter. So Arjuna starts out with, Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Okay, so now Arjuna here says that if you think intelligence is better than fruit of work, then why are you asking me to do this, engage in this war? Because it doesn't seem to match. He hasn't put the two together. Now, this brings out, Prabhupada's made the point that if this is not brought up, then what will happen is in the name of devotional service, you'll find a lot of lazy fellows sitting around. Because they won't do anything. They'll say, well, it's intelligent to give up all things that are difficult and problems of the material world, so I'll just give all that up and sit around and, you know, eat and sleep, you know, like that. So this point, therefore, is being brought up for that reason. Another aspect that is being brought out here, the Prabhupada says, is that he has a doubt, and so then he goes to the spiritual master and asks. He doesn't speculate, but he goes to the spiritual master. And so we see here the proper qualification that he has this understanding, that he must understand. He must know. He must realize. So to do that, he must approach the spiritual master. So this is being brought out here by this example. So now then Krishna will answer this, and the difficulty in giving up the duty. Three. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. So now Krishna is pointing out that everybody's got to work. Even to maintain your body, you have to do that. So one should do work. But one should work in the without attachment, in the spirit of devotion. So he's again bringing out the points there. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a point on the Krishna's use of the word nishta, or his faith, or his platform, where he's situated. And that is very, very important to understand. Krishna's using these two platforms of karma and jnana. So the idea is that as you have this stepping stone, I mean these different, I'm not sure if it is comes from the Sanskrit or that, but Burijan always uses this term, yoga ladder. Basically, he's used taking from, you have karma, then from karma following the karma kanda, then you understand that there is no real benefit to this, so then you start taking up sakam, karma yoga, and then nishkam, and then you come to the platform of Brahman realization, and then take up pure devotional service. So he's giving this as the ladder, and this will always be referred to. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is that we must understand a platform that we're situated on, one's position. So that's based on faith and purity of heart. These develop. So a very important point is being brought out by Arjuna asking here, because Krishna has said, we want the best thing is to have this vyavasayatmika buddhi, this one-pointed intelligence, one-pointed determination. So that comes when you're fixed on one goal. And that comes when one doesn't have many desires. One has many material desires, one cannot do that. So when the material desires become reduced, then one can fix one's mind on one point. And that point then is pointed out as Krishna. So this is very, how you say? Because here the analytical study is being given. Previously analytical, and now he's getting into the more details of it. But in this, also just in the devotional process, we understand that after one becomes situated in bhajana kriya, that means when one takes shelter of the spiritual master and starts following the instructions of the spiritual master, in other words, following the rules and regulations of devotional service and devotional life, then this then starts to purify the heart. Then one comes into the next platform, is anartha nivritti, where one needs to remove these doubts and misgivings from the heart. So doubts are, one doesn't quite understand something in the philosophy, or is one's not fully convinced, or doesn't know how to apply it. One wants to know, but one becomes bewildered. And misgivings are the something that's the doubt on another side. It's just, you just don't think it's right. So one thing is, a doubt is like Arjuna, well, you said this and this, and if I think I understand, it's like this and that. Misgivings means you don't necessarily accept what is being said. You don't really accept why Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, why I am not also enjoyer. Or why this person should have this and not me, and why this and that, why there must be birth, death, old age and disease, and why Krishna puts me through all this, and why that. In other words, it's more the line of, how you say, unsubmissive inquiry. You generally find that from doubts, then one can answer doubts. Misgivings are much more difficult to deal with. Misgivings generally lead to what we would, in modern terms, call issues. Issues come from misgivings. Doubts, just some bewilderment comes. You don't know what to do and all this, and if you have good association or you approach somebody, you inquire, you may get an answer. And if you don't, then you may go on in bewilderment. But misgivings, then, is you just don't like it. Right? Doubt is you don't know. Misgiving, I don't like this. I don't agree with it. So Arjuna here is not saying I don't agree. He's just saying it seems contradictory. So explain. And here we see the good culture of the student, of the disciple, is that he is thinking, if there is a doubt, it's because I did not understand. The spiritual masters explained it, I didn't understand it. So the fault's not the spiritual master, that's misgiving. That means I don't think this guy knows what he's talking about. You know? But the doubt is here just, I don't understand it. It seems that you've said this, but also you've said that, and I can't work it out. I don't know what to do. Like that. That's a doubt. And that's understood, it will come. That's why it's here in the Gita. It's all of Krishna's doubts. Right? Krishna says later, you know, free from doubt, stand and fight. Because if you have no doubt, then you're fixed. And you can do things. So doubts and misgivings must be removed. Otherwise, we cannot become fixed. So this means anarthas have to go. Because the doubts come up because of we have our own ideas, and especially, you know, we have ideas, and misgivings generally come from attachments, you know, very strong attachments, and something's being said, it shouldn't be like this, well, I don't think, I don't agree with that. You know, I don't think it's like that. Rather than, well, what's Krishna saying? What is the actual position? So this platform Nishkam Karma also we see is an advanced platform where one is fixed in devotional service. One becomes fixed because the anarthas are gone, the doubts are gone. So one is able to then in that way progress without attachment. Right? Without any, you know. Does that make some sense? So it's an important point. Is that we can understand it just in terms of devotional service, is that when the anarthas are there, there's every chance that sakam karma will be more prominent. Because we're attached to the work, we're attached to the fruit of the work. But we're doing it in connection to Krishna. We're thinking of Krishna. Yeah. In other words, is that the whole process is where karma kanda turns into, like a karma kandi turns into a karma yogi, is that he understands that there is a goal rather than just sense gratification. The karma kandi, he actually thinks that I perform my prescribed duties and I'll get a favorable result and I want to be happy. So he thinks that these work will give him a result. He's thinking like that. But now the karma yogi, he understands that no, there's an ultimate goal. I still have attachments. I still have my conditioned nature. So Krishna's recommending here that you have to work. I mean, even to maintain your body, you have to work. You can't just sit around all day and do nothing. You'll get sick. So activity must be there. So you should do that to please the Lord. Right? All things must be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu. Because of this point here, everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he's acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So our body is going to need a particular amount or type of work. The mind also, the intelligence also. They need to be engaged. And that has come because of our previous attachments to the modes of nature. So they've arranged for us this particular set of mind, intelligence, and ego, and the senses that we have now. That whatever we have today is whatever we've done in the past, that's what we've gotten with. So before we left the last body, we were in the consciousness and had the attachments and everything that created this body. So in the last body, even though we still had our previous body that looked different from this body, the consciousness, the mind, the intelligence, everything was already like this body. So this is now just the next natural step. So we have it. And it's done. So there's nothing to really do about that. You can't go back to the, you know, back down to the central office and complain that you want a refund or something, you know, like that. It's just the way it is. We're stuck. Now, Krishna's saying you engage that. You engage that. So in the beginning, we're still going to have attachments for the body, attachments for the mind, attachments for the kind of work, and the results. But we know that there is a higher purpose. We know there's a higher purpose. So we're endeavoring for this higher purpose. So that makes the karma yogi. One who endeavors for the higher purpose beyond the fruit that the karma gives. Understand? Karma kanya means he does the activities of karma, he wants the fruits of karma, and he's satisfied. That's all he wants. But a karma yogi means he does the activities of karma, but he wants the fruits, he wants the spiritual result. This makes the difference. It's his goal. Like that. That makes the difference. Then also in here, is because this is meant for means non-devotees can also take advantage of this and come to the devotional platform. So it's just basically two things are there. One is their goal. The karma yogi can know that there's something higher. In other words, he's heard about jnana, that we're not the body, this and that. So he does the activities as he's supposed to. And then with that he comes to the platform of jnana. But he may still never hear about Krishna. He may never complete the yoga ladder because he doesn't know what the goal is. You can't get to a place where you don't know where you're going. You get on the road and at one end is, you know, one place and at the other end is another. But if you don't know that there's another place at the other end, you may walk some distance and when you see something interesting off the side of the road, you leave the road and go off there. So like that is we have to know what is the goal. That must be there. You know? It's automatic, like we were discussing yesterday. It's automatic as long as you know what the goal is and you're endeavoring for that through the prescribed duties. So one of the prescribed duties is to make that endeavor, to free yourself from doubts. Like that. Then it's automatic. But if you're not making that endeavor with that intelligence, then what's going to be automatic? You know, we can say other things. Automatically you may be deviated or you'll be slowed down. We can say that's automatic. If you don't do like this, your progress will be slow. So we have to make this distinction between the karma yogi who is non-devotee and the karma yogi who is a devotee. This also then brings out a different platform for what are prescribed duties. This also is very important to understand. Because the prescribed duties for the non-devotee karma yogi means he just takes what the shastras give, means what he's come in contact with, basically, and who he's heard from the people that he's heard from. And the goal is karmakanda. The goal is a materialistic activity. Right? I mean a material result by this material activity. But he's giving up the desire for that result. Though some, he's endeavoring for that. That. But for us, it means whatever that means. In other words, the basic principle is prescribed duties come from Shastra. Right? Yeah, okay, this is coming up in the next point. Okay, let us read this next point, and then this will come up. So now he is describing what is the karma, you know, what it means. All these things. Verse 10. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is first offered for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat on the sin. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. So, now, in here, we're starting to hear about sacrifice that is described in the Vedas. Now, we understand here, Krishna's pointed out that the Supreme Lord is situated in these acts. So, by performing these acts, then one pleases the Lord. Now, there's different levels of pleasing. One is the lowest level, is that instead of just being an irregulated person interested in sense gratification and just does whatever he wants, then that means there's no acceptance of authority, no regulation of the senses. It's animal life. Right? Even the animals would be more regulated than such a person. Because an animal always does the same thing. It means they may do their activities of sense gratification, and it may be quite, you know, gross and, you know, animalistic, but it's always the same. So they're regulated to always performing one way of, you know, just their activities. But the human who doesn't regulate, he's worse than this animal, because he can do anything. It means one sinful activity can get you a reaction and generally give you one particular animal birth. So we see human beings can break so many, like Jagai Madhai. They broke every rule there is in the Dharma Shastra. So that means whatever species of life and whatever hell and punishment there is was awaiting them. Right? They were the topmost of the sinful. Oh, you know, they were the best of the sinful. That. So if one takes up regulated life, means the senses are controlled. This is human life. So that's why Prabhupada says human life begins with Varnashram. It begins with, because the point is it's, you're inquiring into the Supreme, though here it's still indirect. You're following authority. You've accepted authority, you've accepted regulation of the senses, which is important. Right? Because the next step is we're going to regulate more. We're going to control now the desires. We've regulated the body. We've accepted authority. Now we're going to take it the step where we regulate the desires and we accept the supreme authority. Or for the non-devotee, at least that there's a higher authority than just, I mean, there's a higher position that is there that is being given by the Shastra. Means there's a higher level of the scriptures. The Karmakanda, higher than that is the Jnanakanda. So this is it's good for them. But the devotee, he sees that there is the spiritual direction. And therefore, desire may be there, but he's trying to remove that desire. So in the beginning, we have this attachment for this service and attachment for the results. But we know it's not good and we're trying to remove it. But it's removed by those activities. Right? One is very attached to doing some particular service. That's fine. Do that. Because by doing that and doing it for Krishna, without attaching to the result, one will become purified. Right? So then eventually one becomes the platform of Nishkam. When one is not attached to the result, one may still be attached to the service itself. Because we have the conditioned nature, and we find that engaging that in conditioned nature is, you know, the easiest thing to do. We have an ability, and we just do that. We want to just do service for Krishna. We have a particular nature. We just do those services for Krishna. So we find that that's good, because it's easy. It's better than trying to do something that's not our nature. Because then we won't do. And Krishna says, better to do your own nature than follow someone else's. Do your own imperfectly, right? Than someone else's perfectly, right? That's why we're sitting here. We're doing our own service imperfectly by sitting here and speaking of Gita. This is what we're supposed to do. And if we did somebody else's service, you know, better. So and then the platform of bhakti is that one is not attached to the results or the service itself, the particular kind of service. One just wants to serve Krishna and please Krishna, that's all. His only motive for serving is to please Krishna and no other purpose. This is bhakti. So this is where we're making the distinction. Attachment to the service and the result, sakam, karma. But one knows the goal and one's trying to give that up. Nishkam karma means there's no desire for the fruit, but you're still attached to the work because it suits your nature. Right? Then bhakti is that even that's given up. Means the desire, the attachment to that. But as we'll see now, Arjuna Krishna doesn't say, give up that work. That's the next natural thing. You figure, okay, now I should give up that work. But here he says, but for one who takes pleasure, this is text 17, but for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend upon any other living being. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. O son of Prita, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. For if I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So here Krishna has pointed out that whatever, like Janaka, whatever he's done, he's attained perfection. And even Krishna is doing. So why not Arjuna should do what he's supposed to do? Because his interesting point here, he says, a self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Right? One would think, well, I'll give that up, but what's the purpose? If we have no attachment and no desire, whether you do it or don't do it, it's not a problem. So doing it, there's no reason not to do it. Right? Prescribed duties give you a reason why you do something, why you don't do something. But when you go beyond that, there's no reason to not do it either. Right? There's no reason for, you know, Bhakti Vinod not to be married and have 12 children. There's no reason not to. Right? Like that. So the whole purpose is that duties are there. So someone who is not on that platform, the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then he has a conditioned nature, and the conditioned nature must be engaged. Has to do it. Right? And once you come to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, you don't have to do it, but there's no reason not to do it either. Basically, it doesn't matter either way. If everything's Brahman, what does it matter whether you do it or not do it? So therefore, Krishna recommends doing it, you do it. It's no big deal. Janaka is here. He attained perfection by performance. And Krishna himself is saying, I even do it. And here again, he's given two examples. Himself and Janaka. Janaka attained perfection. He's a great personality. He's accepted. And he himself is doing it. Because if he didn't do, then everyone would just do what he did. So the point comes is that Arjuna, okay, maybe he's very qualified, very controlled sense is that he can go off to the forest, leave his duties, and be there and be Krishna conscious. But if everybody else did that, what would happen? Right? That point was made previously. Vishwanath points out about the platform that one's on, whether one's duties are more to do with karma or more to do with jnana. The activities may be more involved with the material world, particularly the grihastha. And then sannyas means it has to be not as much, one doesn't involve oneself in that way. The emphasis is more on the knowledge part. But still activity must be there. Duties must be performed. Like that. So one has to see and situate oneself. Right? So he's recommending before to Arjuna, is you're not situated on that platform, you're a grihastha, you have all these things, you're doing all these things. So you should do these things. You shouldn't go off to the forest. So if he does that, that will set a bad example for others who are not going to be able to follow this. Others won't be able to follow. So it sets a bad example. So one should see what is the desires, what is the position, what is the adhikar, or the nishta, where one is fixed, then one can progress very nicely. In other words, when there's a lot of anarthas, then one must very nicely engage in, you know, the activities that fit those anarthas. And when there's less anarthas, then one engages in activities that fits that. So it's just basically whether the anarthas are karma or jnana. Right? Someone's anarthas are very much into, you know, knowledge and this and that, then that is their path to purify. They do that for Krishna. Someone else does the other activities. So Arjuna is a very active person. He's a warrior, he's gone to the heavenly planets. He's done all this endeavor just to get so many weapons. And now suddenly he's going to go to the forest, be the big jnani. So Krishna's pointing out, no, this is not for you. You do these duties. You're a kshatriya, you're a grihastha, do those duties. And you'll become perfect. Janaka, he's a king. He's doing. I don't think generally the Janaka, that line, that they're all very peaceful kings. Their kingdom, you never hear about them having no one fight. There's generally no one's interested in that side of the planet anyway. You know, the lower part of Nepal, in the plains place, you know, you never hear of anybody fighting over that. It's a very, quite peaceful place. So Janaka would always support, you know, the arts and knowledge, and he's always doing these big... You always hear in the scriptures about Janaka, like Gargi Upanishad. And it's about Gargi in that. And this big conference that she was at, she went to, that was being sponsored by Janaka. Because he'd always do these big yagyas, and then all kinds of sages and that would come, and then they'd discuss philosophy, and that's what he was doing. So he's doing his prescribed duties just so he can get all this nice association of the sages. So even though one doesn't need anything, one is doing, set example. So as long as you need it to purify yourself, you follow it because it must be done. And there, and then once you finish it, then you follow it to set example for others. This is so, therefore, in the Lord's pastimes, in the activities of sacrifice, they always go on. Right? And that is the preaching mission. The Paramahamsa doesn't have to follow. The Hamsa doesn't have to follow. But if they're going to be a Gostiyanandi, then that means you're with others, one follows to set example. But a Bhajanandi, he may or may not follow. He's not trying to set example for anybody. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur forbade his disciples from going and seeing Bhamsi Das Babaji. Because he was acting, he was a Paramahamsa acting as one. He was not acting as a Madhyam. He was a Paramahamsa acting as a Paramahamsa. So he said, he told his disciples, even if you just see him, you'll commit offense. Because you'll think, how good this person is spiritual. Because we're attached to prescribed duties. Right? And if someone's not performing them, whatever we consider prescribed duties, even if it's as a malecha and yavana, someone's not doing that, we think they're strange. Right? Someone from one country thinks the customs and that of another country are strange. But in the other country, that's the prescribed duties. In this country, it's another set of prescribed duties. Right? And then Krishna gives the prescribed duties for the sadhaka, And the sadhaka, he'll think this is proper activity. And it is for him. The Paramahamsa doesn't need to follow the essence. He's already following the essence. Right? The point of the big reservoir is already has, the purposes of the small wells are already fulfilled. So all the purposes of sadhana is contained, is achieved by the Paramahamsa just in his absorption in Krishna. Because all the sadhana is just to bring you the point of always remember Krishna, never forget. So then if we see someone who's not doing that, then we think this is very strange. So therefore he said, don't go see. Don't go see. Otherwise we won't understand. Can't understand. Just a little point hovering around. It's another point on this. I get close to why I'm talking to something else. I remember it, and when I finish it, I can't remember it. Yeah, it was just in the. It's not the point I'm thinking of, but it just in the last part where he's talking about the whole relationship between the demigods and the humans and sacrifice, is that Arjuna is thinking, I'll go to the forest. So I don't have to do anything for the demigods because they're doing nothing for me. You know, so why I should... What's the problem? You're saying all this about sacrifice and this and all these different things, and I'll go to the forest. Then Krishna points out, because they eat... Devotees are released from all kinds of sins because they offer food, which is first offered for sacrifice. All living entities, all living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. So you're going to eat only because it rains. You know, you can go to a desert and, you know, it's going to be very difficult to find anything to eat because it doesn't rain. But in the forest, the reason there's a forest is because it's raining there. And in the forest, you'll find things to eat. So that rain has come from the demigods. And they are providing because there is yajna, sacrifice is done, and sacrifice is coming from prescribed duties. So if you run away to the forest, you're not performing your prescribed duties, it will only be sin. And Arjuna is very worried about sin. Right? So he's giving him just the opposite. He's thinking, by going away to the forest, I will avoid sin. But no, Arjuna, Krishna is saying, when you go to the forest, then that itself will be sinful because you are taking things from the forest without performing yajna, without performing sacrifice. And then he points out here that then others will follow that example, they will also become sinful. And Krishna gives his own example. Therefore, even I follow all the rules and regulations. Otherwise, everybody would follow what he's doing. So Krishna's following nicely now. He's telling Arjuna to follow nicely. Well, I think the point... Yeah, it's a thing on sadhana. I was pointing out we're getting into the levels of prescribed duties. So this level of prescribed duties changes with each individual depending upon their platform of realization. You know, so for the non-devotee, then this will be very much just the broad spectrum of the Vedic culture or literatures, whatever they've been trained in, whatever they've been brought up in, what is the norm for them in their community. You know, their ways of marriage and their rituals they do in their house and this and that. But they should be following them completely. You know? Nowadays people don't follow so strictly. But they should be following them very strictly. Because their only connection to the Lord is through following the prescribed duties of sacrifice that are the Lord. Krishna says he is sacrifice. So that's our only connection to the Lord. Right? But now for us, then we just take what the acharyas have given us and the scriptures that the acharyas have recommended for us as prescribed duties. So when we say varnashram, or when we say the karma kanda and all this, it's not the same as the karmi's karma kanda. Janaka Raj is performing all the different sacrifices, and that he's supposed to as a king. We see Yudhishthira is also. But we're not talking that. We're talking what we are given. The central core is the sadhana bhakti. What activities are given in the nectar devotion, and what rules and regulations are given by Sanatana Goswami in the deity worship. You know, we discussed that yesterday, the day before, on, you know, getting up in the morning and our different activities, what we're doing before breakfast, after breakfast. So what we're really talking about of nature, and those are prescribed duties, but that is the prescribed duties of sadhana bhakti. That is also prescribed duties for us. Right? Though it's on a much higher level than the karmakandas. You know, a jnani is considered much greater than a karmakandi. Like that. Then of jnanis, then very few actually become liberated. And of those who are out of, you know, thousands who have endeavored for liberation, very few get. And of those few, out of thousands of them, hardly one knows anybody. Right? Manushanam sahasreshu kastit yadati siddhaye. Yadatam api siddhanam. So very few is the Vedi Tattva. That he actually knows what is truth, Tattva. He doesn't know who is Krishna. So those who have come to the devotional platform, we can see it's already way beyond karma, jnana, all this thing. But we are conditioned, so we have to go through that process. But it's like almost like a parallel process. So all the descriptions here that go for the karma yogi who is non-devotee, also same thing apply for the karma yogi who is a devotee. But we're dealing, instead of going through lifetimes of progress, we're talking about one lifetime of progress. So what they would take them lifetimes of going through karma and then coming to jnana and then just going around in this circle, then they decide to step out of this by performing karma with detachment and try for a higher goal. So that it speeds them up. And now we're talking about even more sped up. Instead of still over lifetimes, we're just talking about one lifetime. Is that by coming in contact with the spiritual master and the devotees, by their association, then we take these things very seriously. Devotional service, the goal, everything, very specifically. Then we advance very, very quickly. So in one lifetime we're going through this, all the different levels of attachment and detachment and like this and progressing. So the devotee, it sounds the same, but we must understand what is prescribed duties for us. Right? Here Arjuna knows his prescribed duties is to do whatever he's supposed to do, is a kshatriya, fight this battle, then they manage the kingdom, and then they leave for the forest, you know, like this. That's his prescribed duties. But for us it means our core is the sadhana bhakti. Then, depending upon our conditioning, we engage in services, nishkam karma for Krishna. Right? According to what is given, the broad realm of things for the brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, brahma, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, whatever Prabhupada and the acharyas give, that much we're taking only. We're not taking the vast ocean. Right? It's mentioned here, Bhurijan mentions that there is 1 lakh. 1 lakh lakhs of verses of all the Vedas in the supplementary literature. That means 10 billion verses. Most of that is talking karmakanda. Just a little bit is talking jnanakanda. And then out of so much of that, only a little bit is talking bhakti. So we're just taking bhakti, which is distilled the essence from all that. But now, because we're conditioned, we have bodies must be engaged in some way. There must be a social structure, there must be interaction. Right? That's what we're looking for. We're looking for interaction. We want spiritual interaction. So we have to practice that here, on the platform that we're at. So we need to have some form, some way to engage our conditioned nature. So for us, those prescribed duties of sadhana and varnashram that have been given to us, that for us is our prescribed duty. We're not talking something else. We're not talking things that don't come in line with, as we discussed yesterday, devotional service, and, you know, that is, and the modes of nature that we're dealing with from the mode of goodness. so everything must fit within that. That is the mood. The mood, the approach, the consciousness, we're dealing with that. The activities may be in any of the modes. That's just the way it is. Like sleep, sleep's ignorance. But it doesn't mean that a devotee doesn't sleep. Krishna says a yogi who eats too much, eats too little, sleeps too much, sleeps too little, can't be a yogi. So he mentions sleep, so the right amount of sleep. So even though it's ignorance, but it's still part of the service, part of the sadhana, part of the engagement. But it's regulated. Everything's regulated. So we must regulate ourselves according to what is given to us as our prescribed duties. Just like you're in the temple, or you're in the home, and there's duties you're supposed to perform there. You've been given some service. That is your prescribed duties. The mentalities that are given. Rupa Goswami talks about, Krishna talks about in the Gita, how you interface with others, how you perform your activities, that is your prescribed duties. To chant our 16 rounds, follow the four Vedic principles, that is our duties, that is our prescribed duties. So what we would call devotional service and the Vaishnav culture and Daiva Varnasham as been described by Prabhupada, that is our prescribed duties, not something else. We don't have to think now this means, oh, then karma kanda, we have to go out and get ourselves a Rig Veda and then, you know, start the... No. Because in this age, it is Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan. So this preaching mission then follows a particular set of the rules. This is being spoken in the Dwapara Yuga. They're following a different set. Janaka is at a different age. He's following a different set of rules. Right? We go back in the Bhagavatam also. We see those in the Satya Yuga. They're doing their meditation and all that. That's another set of rules. Like that. So we have our set of rules. It's set by our acharyas. That's very important to understand when we're always using the term prescribed duties. This is what we mean. Here. Like that. Okay. Then. So the next two points, then Krishna gives us how you're going to deal with others. Setting the example and dealing with others. Because he said you set example. So that means you're advancing. You're in a position better than another because you've taken up the process of yoga. Others have not. So how to deal with those who have not? How to bring them from karma to karma yoga? So here then Krishna says, 25 and 26, as the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruit of results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. So we see here it says, rather than working in the spirit of devotion, that means he's working himself and setting the example. Then you engage others. Engage them. It means whatever they're doing, do that for Krishna. No, Prabhupada says you don't have to change your position, anything. You start from wherever you are and now just change your consciousness. Now you do it for Krishna and you won't be attached to the results. You endeavor for that. Then they become purified. And as they're purified, then their situation may change. Then what will be their prescribed duties, or at least the sphere of their prescribed duties, may change. Maybe totally different. Right? Like that. So here the point is we must be very careful, is not tell somebody not to do something in this way. It's like somebody is very attached and has so much stuff, just tell them to just move into the temple. It may not be the right thing. They can, where the position they're in, engage themselves. Then as they become purified, then that situation may change. Anyway, it's changing in our own life. We're going through so many different stages of life. You know, so that affects what will be our prescribed duties. Brahmacharya's prescribed duties are different from the Grihastha's, different from the Vanaprastha's, different from the Sannyas. Right? It's different. Though the essence, the sadhana stays the same, right? And the essence of working for Krishna, whatever he's prescribed, do you do that for Krishna? Without attachment, that remains. But the nature, the sphere of activities, that changes. So that we have to see as the consciousness develops, as the faith develops, as the detachment develops, then one can situate oneself on these different platforms. Does that make some sense? Then Krishna goes on. So how a person how someone should act now is being given here. It's up to 42. Yeah. Okay. 27. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, Almighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and the sense and sense gratification. Knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities, become attached, but the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claims for to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. Okay, that's up to you. Oh, excuse me, a few more. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavor for perfection. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion, because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though faulty, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duties, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So here is then just continuation of that, is that we know it's inferior, but the point is one gets from a lower platform to a higher platform by steps. You want to get to a building, you go up steps, you want to climb up a ladder, you go from one rung to the next. It may be very nice that one is, you know, on the top of the ladder and someone else is coming and you just say, no, no, just jump up here. It won't happen. You have to go through. So an intelligent person who actually understands the process and recommends going through step by step and knows what to say to what at what platform, that is very good. Otherwise, the top, of course, is the best. But that doesn't mean that everybody can do it. You know, just like the small child, it may be the best. Why bother with primary, secondary education? I mean, everyone's doing that simply to get a university degree anyway. So he should just, you know, give up all this ABCs and, you know, all the kindergarten and all these, you know, cookies and milk and all that, and just, you know, go straight for, his degree in, you know, whatever it is, you know, nuclear physicist, you know, like that, or, you know, something like this. But it's not going to happen like that. One has to know where one is at and engage it. So he says, don't unsettle them. You just show them how at that position you can engage yourself in Krishna's service. that becomes a service. And if you unsettle them, then they'll have to go back to that platform anyway and continue and start. The person may be on the ground and you just say, yeah, jump up here. They jump. They may go up two or three rungs and then they'll fall down again. Right? And there's every chance that they'll be disturbed. You know? And then they may not want to climb up the ladder. Because you're saying it's great up here, and then you told them to jump, and then they saw that they jumped, and it wasn't so great. So therefore, why should they even think that what you say is on the top is great? So one shouldn't unsettle, one should take them step by step. Because, as we've pointed out before, renunciation doesn't give realization. You do your work with detachment, that gives you the realization and the solid renunciation. Right? Jnana and Vairag come from performing works of devotion. So it's superior. So someone who just says go from attachment to nothing means they don't understand the process. They think detachment is better than acting for Krishna. So this comes, you know. And it goes, and this dilemma comes up. There's many times you find that. Those in the detached ashrams, they always think that the grihasthas are in maya. Right? Because they don't see that this is, you engage this in Krishna's service with detachment, right? With knowledge that we're not the body. You know, the house is not ours, it's Krishna's. The activities, how you say, are being done by Krishna's arrangement. He is our protector. All this goes on very nicely. And one advances. Arjuna is a grihastha. So Krishna's not saying, first you take sannyas and we'll talk. No, that's Shankaracharya. If you want to follow the path of jnana, the first thing you have to do is take sannyas. If you want to be purely situated on the platform of jnana, it can only happen if you are a sannyasi. Therefore, Shankaracharya would just say, you want to discuss the philosophy, you're interested in spirit, just take sannyas, then we'll talk. Otherwise, you'll not understand it, can never understand it. Therefore, unless one is pure like that, it doesn't work. That's why in this age it's not recommended. This kind of sannyas is not, who can do it? Who can follow where you're just there due to you've just given it up and purely happy just studying Vedanta? No. Can't do it in this age. Therefore, this path going through this nishkam karma, that is the path. You do your prescribed duty, whatever it is, for Krishna, without attaching. Then that will elevate one. And the same way is then you find grihasthas think everybody in the world should be a grihastha. And that if anybody isn't, they're just pretending or fooling themselves or immature. But then that means they don't understand or have faith in the process either. Because they think that I'm going to go on and doing whatever my position, I'm always going to stay in that. Just like Arjuna and the Pandavas and that, right? They never left for the forest. Like that, it must be an interpolation in the Bhagavatam that the Pandavas retired timely. You know? Means they understood. Krishna's gone, Parikit is here, someone can take over, it's time for us to leave. It must be interpolation, right? Just like the Madhvas don't accept the Brahma Vimohan Lila, where Brahma becomes bewildered and steals the cowherd boys and calves, all that stuff. That lila, the Madhvas reject. Because, you know, Brahma's their head of the Sampradaya, so he can never become bewildered, so it must be an interpolation. And someone's put that in. But we don't think like that. We know it's Krishna's arrangements like this. So we also know that chapter belongs there. So even the Pandavas came to the platform of understanding our work's done and we move on. So when that comes, that is up to the individual. So this is one has to understand this, then all these things go away. Because it's prescribed duties. The philosophy is perform your prescribed duties. For you, what is your adhikar now? What it is today? Perform those duties. And if you understand the whole process, this whole yoga, you don't think that there's any problem with a position lower or position higher. Wherever you are at, wherever you find yourself, you follow that, you will get out. You'll become liberated, you'll come to the devotion, you'll become pure devotee. Then you can have the devotional process works nicely, the interaction between devotees work nicely. In other words, you understand the philosophy, then the sadhana and the Vaishnava etiquette works properly. And then you can understand this whole thing of application of prescribed duties. So without the philosophy, it's no question to understand prescribed duties. Right? One may say, well, I'll just work. Enough of this talk. Let's just work. But nishkam karma means work with knowledge. So without knowledge, how are you going to work? It's not going to be nishkam karma. Karma, it's something. Because also there's one purport here, Prabhupada points out, that is very interesting here. This is on the point of his going to the making the point about the inferior, going to the forest. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. This will come up later, because there's two points here. Freedom from abandoning work and renunciation. Abandoning the work is sannyas, and renunciation is tyag. The two different things, right? So the details of that aren't given here. They'll come later. So he's pointing out that just giving up everything doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be perfection. Prabhupada purport says, the renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord, Bhuti Yoga. Even a slight performance of such a principle enables one to overcome great difficulties. There's more to this purport. He's just taken the words that connect here. Because this brings in so many points. The point is you just do something, whatever it is, perfect, imperfect, connected to Krishna, you advance. That's the point. So just start. Do. But we see as Krishna goes on, he says you should stick to your own nature and perform your own prescribed duties. And here he's saying here, don't do someone else's duties. Now, someone may say, well, if I can do someone else's duties nicely, why I shouldn't do it? But this is the point is, I'm doing that because I think I'm going to get some particular result from that. Right? I manage because I think I'll get this facility. I may manage nicely, but because it's not my nature, I won't actually manage nicely. I'll think I'll manage nicely. Right? What things I see as management, I will do those nicely, but the other things that may be protecting everyone and giving shelter and doing so many things, I may miss. But the reason I manage is, well, these guys are managing, they have all this facility, I can manage, I'll get all the facility. That's why it's better to do your own, even if it's not so perfect, because it fits one's nature. It fits one's nature, and it gives you the result that's due to you. You have a nature, there's a facility you require. You get more than that, less than that, you have a difficulty. Difficulty meaning remaining Krishna conscious. Right? You give someone whose nature is to have simple things, you give him more, he'll have difficulty. You give less, he'll have difficulty. In both cases, he'll forget Krishna. As one becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness, whether one has unlimited or has nothing, it doesn't matter. Because one is seen as Krishna is the essence of work, working for Krishna. So one must perform one's own prescribed duties. And then Krishna gives a point here. Yeah. here, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruits of actions. So a few things come out here is that you have his injunctions, the duties according to his injunctions, and follow this teaching. So you have the injunctions that are there, and this teaching, how to follow those injunctions. It means the injunction says you do this, 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 but you have to do it according to how Krishna is saying now. Do it without the attachment, with knowledge. Right? He says, without envy. This is important, because envy stems from not accepting the Lord as the supreme enjoyer. You think, I should be the enjoyer, the controller. Like that. So that difficulty comes up. You have to be free. So that means you must be a devotee. Then you'll be freed from bondage of fruitive actions. Also then with others. We may deal roughly with others and be envious of others. Then the Vaishnav, how you say, etiquette can't be followed. And there's difficulties. Right? First one, first offense, be, you know, blaspheming the preachers who've dedicated their lives. So they may be doing perfectly or not, but that's their nature. They've tried for it. You know, somehow or another, whatever our nature is, we've dedicated that to the preaching mission. We do our best. Krishna says, even if it's imperfect, still, if it's done for him, he accepts it. Do something. Because the etiquette is broken. We're envious. Why will we blaspheme? Blaspheme means it's wrong what we're saying. We may say, well, if somebody does something wrong, I can say. If we're in the position and we say in the right way, that's not blasphemy. That can be, you know, positive criticism. We're trying to help somebody. So that's not blasphemy. Blasphemy means what we're saying is wrong. It's either said in the wrong attitude or we're saying the wrong things. What we're saying has no truth. It may be our vision or our opinion, but Krishna's pointing out his things. His injunctions, not our injunctions. So that's very important. Then in the next verse, those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them are considered to be bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. Yeah. So, one has to be very careful to reject these teachings of Krishna, the acharyas, and that are given. Prabhupada says, this is the way we act. We have to accept that. We can't reject it because, we never saw it on our block when we grew up. Like that. Otherwise, this is the problem. We will become befooled and ruined in our endeavors for perfection. So what little is given to us in the sadhana, in the different rituals, in the different social customs and etiquette that we have to accept. We may have doubts. That's not a problem. We may say, why? Can you explain this? I don't understand this. That is recommended. That means we're thoughtful. Right? We think. Manana. And that is recommended. One becomes thoughtful. Try to understand and know. Because you must perform your duty with knowledge. Then that gives realization. Detachment and knowledge. Jnana and vairag. That's what we're looking for. So if I don't know, then I should ask. Ask, study, contemplate. So that's not a problem. But to reject out of envy, this is misgiving that we talked about before. That's going to get us nowhere. That just creates issues. Right? You generally see if you take any major issue, it comes back to a misgiving. Right? A misgiving. You know, why, you know, this person or why this group of persons should be in a position, have a certain facility, have a certain authority. You know, why different groups of devotees should have different prescribed duties, why Ruhasta should be restricted like this, or Brahmacharis like this, or Sannyasis like this. it's a misgiving. You know, I don't agree with it. But Krishna is saying here, you're not going to get anywhere. We have to accept, just accept that this is the way it is. And he's explaining it. And one can ask, like Arjuna, why this? But we have to be like Arjuna to have the character that when we ask, we actually want an answer. We follow the etiquettes in asking, and we hear the answer. And if we're not satisfied, we ask more questions. Right? If someone says something, we hear it, we analyze it, we think how to apply it, and then we run into a problem, this means we're thinking. Right? Probably get many times, you know, he would make a comment, he would finish the class, ask for any questions, no questions. Right? So Prabhupada point out, no one's thinking. We're not thinking, okay, nishkam karma, act without attachment, with knowledge and that. And then we think, how do I apply that in my situation? This may raise doubts. Right? May raise doubt. How do I do this? So then like Arjuna, okay, now what do I do? I want to do it. He doesn't say I don't want to do it. I want to do it. But now does that mean I'm going to the forest or I'm fighting? But it appears that you're saying I should fight, but you say you should use my brain. So my brain says don't fight. You know? So then please answer this. Like that. So it says here, even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he's acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? We can try, but it'll have problem. We can try, but it will have problem. It's just time. We try to act out of our nature, it will create problem. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it will create. Right? Like Arjuna goes to the forest. When he first goes to the forest and goes, wow, this is great, maybe nothing's happening. But once the news gets back to everybody else what happened, then we might find, you know, half the kingdom goes off to the forest. That's when the problem will start. And then when he's in the forest for a long time, then because he's a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas, you know, if they're challenged, they fight. He'll be there in the forest. All kinds of things are there. Other than animals and sages, there's also demons. There's also, you know, Gandharvas and others and all kinds of people coming along and taking advantage of the forest. He will get into another fight, right? The Pandavas lived in the forest themselves all together for 14 years. When they were young, they lived in the forest. And Arjuna spent an additional 12 years in the forest. And during that time, there were many, 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 many fights. So many fights. They're just living as simple Brahmins in the forest, right? They're sleeping under deer skins. They're just wandering around from village to village. And then, you know, they hear about Draupadi's Swayambar. So if they're nice, just detached Brahmins and just living in the forest and begging, why would they go to a Swayambar? It's meant for Kshatriyas, and you have to fight to get the girl. Because their nature is Kshatriyas. They're not going to act differently. Therefore, they go there. And how do? They come in as Brahmins and just, you know, excuse me, and just kind of do and all this kind of stuff. No, Arjuna goes there, and when he takes his stance and everything, then, you know, Draupadi's hairs are standing on it. He says, this is the guy to marry my daughter. You know? But he's dressed as a Brahmin, so, and he disappears quickly. But while this is going on, all the other Kshatriyas freak out. Everybody else has tried. So all the Kshatriyas have tried. So then they're doing, okay, we're some Brahmins here, can we try now? And when he hits the mark, right, it's one thing. Nobody gets the girl, okay, we can all peacefully go away. All the kings have tried, they failed. And this Brahmin comes out of nowhere and gets the girl. This means fight. This means trouble. You know? The Kshatriya spirit is being lost. Some Brahmin came along and got the girl. So Bhima is standing there just to make sure that Arjuna can get away with the girl. Right? And he's fighting off everybody, you know? And they would just happen to be passing through. Right? Or an Ekachakra, then with that demon Baka, you know, who's eating everybody in the village. So, you know, Bhima Kunti can't handle it. We're living in this house, and these people are going to have to send their child, you know, I mean somebody to there. Each one in the family's arguing. You know, the father's saying, I'm going, and then the mother's saying, they'll all go, and the son is saying, they'll all go, and, you know, each one is giving arguments from the Shastras why they should be the one going, and the other should be there, and this and that. And Kunti can't handle it. She says, you know, we're Kshatriyas. And we're living in their house, they're sheltering us, we have to shelter them. Right? So when Bhima comes home, he says, you go. And Bhima thinks, great, a fight and plenty to eat, right? I'm sitting here, we're going out begging, you know, get a handful of stuff, and I get half of it, and still, you know, that's it, you know. I mean, it's, how many? There's six of them, right? Five Pandavas, Draupadi, Kunti, seven of them. Whatever they beg, then they divide it up. Half is for Bhima, and other half is for the other six, right? Still, he's not satisfied, but he can't take more. They've already given him 50%. So now here's a cartload of food. So he pushes it up to where, you know, Bacchus' place is, because it's out of the city. And Sistan just starts eating, right? And Bacca comes along. You know, what's going on here? You know, this is food. Not only is the food supposed to be for him, but the guy who's eating it's supposed to be for him. And as he's coming, he just pushes them away with one hand to finish eating. It's kind of like, you know, eating is at this point more important than the fighting, you know? And when he's finished eating, then it's okay. Now I've done, you know, you have to have your priorities, you know? So then he turns to, now he takes Bacca and, you know, kills him. But time and time again, they're in the forest, but they act like Kshatriyas. They can't not act, right? The whole Kaurava army has come and has caught the cows of Maharaj Virat. Right? And Arjuna is teaching dancing to the princesses. He's a eunuch, you know, with the floppy wrists and the high voice and all this kind of stuff. But he can't stand that out there's the Kaurava army and they're harassing the king where they're staying. So he goes out and he fights. So many times have come, you cannot do it. If Arjuna couldn't do it, we should not be foolish and think we're going to do it. So we're going to act according to our nature. It's just a matter of time. It's just the way it is. It's just, if you read the Mahabharata, you just see. There's Kshatriyas living in a forest. That's all. That's all. They're not sages living in a forest. They're Kshatriyas. And they don't try not to be Kshatriyas. They're very respectful of the sages, protect them, kill the demons, do all these different things. But they still do it in the Kshatriya spirit. You know? Okay. So now these principles are to regulate attachment and aversion. I don't want to do this. I don't want to get up in the morning in the winter and take a cold bath. I don't like it. But the rule is you have to. You know? I don't want to, you know, only take 3 baths a day in the summer. I just want to take 10 baths a day. Shastra says no. I don't want to cook in the summer. Right? It's hot. Shastra says you must cook. So they regulate our attachment and aversion. Without it, there's no question. We just go by what the mind says. You know? Okay. Therefore, we follow. Okay, now, the last section is text 36 to 43 is lust and anger, or passion and ignorance, foil one's performance of duty. Thus one incurs sins. The senses must be regulated and the intelligence strengthened to control lust. Okay, so now Arjuna, he asks, Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? The Supreme Personality of God had said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by this eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses, intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So we see here that from, even if we're following the duties, if we're not careful, by regulating very nicely and being careful with knowledge, then lust can arise. And from lust, it says wrath. Wrath means ignorance. Lust means passion. Wrath, anger, is ignorance. So in ignorance, then we see from the last chapter, from ignorance, then one becomes bewildered and the intelligence is lost. So then when the intelligence is lost, one falls down. That means one won't be able to perform the prescribed duties. Like that. There's a place earlier in the chapter where Prabhupada, in the purport, I think it's taken from the second canto. No, is it second canto? Yeah, second canto, fourth chapter, second or third verse. Then Prabhupada points out that factually only the devotee can come to this platform, Nishkam Karma. Because the karmis, it's obvious what their desires are. But they give that up, the jnanis, they can't also maintain. They come back down to the platform of philanthropic work, opening hospitals, doing all these different things. So they can't maintain it either. So only the devotee can be nishkam, because he does things for Krishna. He has a higher taste. He has a goal, so he can work for that. Otherwise, the materialist can't. So factually, this process that Krishna is talking about of yoga, even though there's two levels of nishkam karma, one actually has substance because it's connected to Krishna, the other is reflection. Right? And they bring one to the platform of Brahman, but unless one comes in contact with Krishna, with time we fall from the Brahman platform back into the material activities. So it's factually, you know, not real. We can take example from that. We can take example of people who do like this. We can take the shastras that explain it, that it can be followed in either way. But we actually understand that this means being done just for Krishna, right? Because Krishna has already pointed it out a few times now. That do this for me. Then only the devotees. So it's actually meant for this. The whole Vedic literature is only meant for devotional service. So these processes of karma and jnana that are mentioned are actually meant for devotional service. Do activities according to prescribed duties with the knowledge that the scriptures give for Krishna. Then one can avoid lust. Otherwise, lust we can't avoid. Any questions on this? Yes.
It explains sitting places of lust, senses, mind, intelligence.
Mm.
But what is the connection between lust and the very subtlest principle of ahankar? Because that's the subtlest principle of all. Even more subtle than intelligence is ahankar. So what is the actual connection with lust and ahamka or false ego?
It goes back to earlier. Is that the whole idea to enjoying the material world is a mental concoction. So we have an identity that we have, and therefore that identity, we think certain things are going to make us happy. Like if I have an identity, I'm a big manager, then a big position, big facilities, a lot of influence, you know, a lot of clout, that is what I'm going to think makes me happy. So I'm going to work very hard to get these things. So depending upon the identity, you create your sphere of what is desirable, like that. So the whole idea is that the problem is not managing. The problem is that you are managing for the purpose of all these things. So you give up the desire for that, and it goes on. Right? But as you give up that desire, it becomes more and more fixed in devotional service. Therefore, we don't separate it. When you take activities and do it for Krishna, it's devotional service. We just take out the bad element is the bad consciousness. That's the weak point. So Krishna's just you just go on doing what you're supposed to be doing. But take out the material desire, like that. The desire for the results that it will give. Because activity gives result, right? Sannyas means giving up the activity that gives that result, right? Like that. Well, renunciation or tyag means giving up the result that comes. So here, depending upon our position, we perform our activity. It will give some result. Right? The grihastha is doing some business, it gives a result. But he understands that result is Krishna's. It's coming by Krishna's grace. Right? And he maintains himself by this activity. Right? Vanaprastha is often living in the forest. You know? His activity, he goes into a market and just picks up what grains are on the ground. That's his prescribed duty. It gives a result. He gets a bowl full of grains. Right? But he knows it's come by Krishna's grace. Right? And he's not attached. He's using that to maintain the body for Krishna's service. He has more than he needs, he gives it away. Like that. So whatever you do in the material world will give some result. It's just a matter, if it's a big endeavor to get a big result, then it's generally called more by karma. You know, and if something like jnana, still, you study, you get knowledge, it's a result. Right? So there's nothing that's free from everything. It's just where the emphasis is. That's all. You know? That's all. It's just where the emphasis is. Then you call it by a different name. So it's the same thing. Like food. You know, in the whole thing of edibles, you know, you have you're planning a budget, you have your marketing, you have your preparation, you have your cooking, you have your offering, you have your serving, you have your eating, you know, you have your digesting. It's all part of the same process, like that. And they're all interdependent. But depending upon which stage it's at, you call it by a different thing. Like that. So devotional service, the activity, because it's being done for Krishna, is called devotional service. Though it can be said, okay, you're in this stage of it. It's devotional service, but you're now at Sakam Karma or Nishkam Karma. Or now you've come to the Brahma Bhuta platform. Now you this is Bhava. Or now you've come to Prema. Right? Just like in devotion, we divide Kanistam Madhyamutam. So within that, then you can also put these things. Before we seriously started, how you say? Anartha Nivriti is more sakam. With Anartha Nivriti, that's when we're fighting with these desires. When that major fight is over, then it's nishkam. That's called nishta. Then ruchi, you lose the taste for these. The activities aren't given up. Right? He said, Mama Janmani Janmani Shari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahiti Kitwari. Just give me bhakti, activity. It'll be according to the rules. You can look in Nectar Devotion and find whatever activities are going on by Lord Chaitanya and all his eternal associates. Right? Like that. But now it's on the platform of bhakti. So they're always going to do the activity. They're just on that platform. Right? Someone comes further, then they come to Baba. That is the platform of they come to now Brahma Bhuta. Right? So now they're in Bhava Sadhana. Then they come to pure bhakti, prema. But at all stages, these are bhakti. You've taken up devotional service. Right? Then at nishtha, that's called advanced devotional service. Right? Then when we get to bhava, then that's called where, you know, the real pure devotional service starts. Though nishtha has already been called advanced devotional service, and when you walked in the door of the temple and did something, it's called devotional service to Krishna. Right? Because you did it for Krishna. It's connected with sat, it's eternal. And then person on the platform of prema, that's devotional service. So the whole thing is devotional service. It's just what stage you're at, then you have different things you have to endeavor for. Like that. So the whole idea is that we are very careful of lust, because then it creates the desire for the result. And when we desire the result, we lose the knowledge, right? Because we're supposed to work in knowledge. We forget we're not the body. We forget we're not the mind. And we identify with that instead of identifying as servant of Krishna. This is the difference. Is the devotee, his identity has changed. Therefore, for them, the process of this karma yoga is very quick. But for the person who is just performing karma yoga, who's not a devotee, they haven't changed the ego. They've changed the desire. The mind they're controlling to try to keep down the desires, the intelligence is then giving the direction to, like that. But the ego hasn't been changed. Maybe from a gross enjoyer to someone for liberation, but it hasn't become spiritual. Therefore, they actually never become successful. But the devotees changed the identity. And the more we're fixed in that identity, which is as we come, anartha nivritti means we have doubts that I am Krishna's servant. Like that. You know, specifically in practical application. You know? But sometimes even in just philosophical. So when that's removed, you become steady and strong. Then it's nishkam. You become very fixed. Vyavasayatmika bhuti. Then it's very fixed. So makes some sense. Yes. You weren't here yesterday? Okay, in a nutshell, the reservoir is serving the purpose of the small wells. Different wells have different purposes, right? But if you have a big body of water, you can do all activities at it. You understand? So the Vedas have many, many branches of knowledge. You have the Vedic literature itself, you have the Brahmanas, you have the Aranyakas, you have the Upanishads, right? Like that. Then you have the Puranas, you have all the Sanskrit texts, your astrological texts, all the different texts of rituals, you know, your Dharma Shastras, your Nyaya, your Phalata, like this. All these things. So they are for a purpose. The material worlds come from Krishna. Krishna's entered it. It's for the purpose of serving Krishna. So all these branches of knowledge are actually supposed to be engaged in Krishna's service. They have no other purpose. So if one understands philosophy, Vedanta, the Bhagavatam, the Gita, then the purposes of all those other branches of knowledge you have by this. This will come out in the 8th chapter. Whoever is doing devotional service, whatever there is in any other branch of knowledge or activity, you get the benefit already because you have the big pond. So all the purposes are automatically fulfilled. Okay, that's. Anything else? Yes. Okay. So then the question is that we're doing something for Krishna and we're doing something we like to do. So then why is the next natural step we become detached from that service? So here it's, as long as one's conditioned, one has a conditioned nature, one has to work with it. So one does the service, and naturally because one is still has some influence of these modes, then one's going to like doing that service. But we like specifically doing that service because we have the conditioning of that service. But when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, no longer has the conditioning of that service. So one doesn't like to do that service because it matches his conditioned nature very nicely. Now he likes doing the service just because it pleases Krishna. But there's no reason for him, Krishna points out, not to do this service. So he'll continue doing that. Even on the platform of the Uttamadhikar, he's still going to do whatever was seen before as his conditioned nature service. He's still going to do that. You know? Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself presents that he was going through these different stages. He was just an ordinary kid in the, you know, grew up in a family and, you know, just performing material activities and doing the duties of taking care of the family. And then he came in contact with, you know, he started then discussing philosophy with people and all that and got interested in that. You know, so he's gone from karma to jnana, then understood that there's spiritual activities to be done there. And then he finds, you know, the spiritual literatures, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, absorbs himself in that, and then starts to preach and all this, and then, you know, like this, goes on until then we have the, you know, the pure devotee that we know. But he's still a magistrate. That's all. He's still doing it. He's still a magistrate. You know, but we see he's also then increased his sadhana, his writing of books, his preaching to others, his endeavor to, you know, find the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So even though he's presenting himself like this, that he was normal and going up to the advanced platform, he doesn't give up the duties. Only at the very end, he takes Babaji and goes and sits somewhere. But then he still talks. Babaji can talk, so he follows this. And then only at the very end, then he goes into Nirjan Bhajan. So the duties will just continue. It's not necessary to give up. Because he was a grihastha, so until he took sannyas, he didn't give that up. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was also a pure devotee. But he was the astrological pundit for the king of Tripura. Right? Kings have their Brahmins. Bhaktisiddhanta was the best in astrology. You know, knew so many things. So he would sit in his quarter and tell him, you know, what to do when. When he took sannyas, he gave that up. Because sannyas he doesn't have to deal with. Like that. But he performed the duties of a sannyasi. But he's not attached to them. He's not doing it because he likes doing it. It's just the situation he's in, he does it. So for him, it's the pleasing Krishna. Understand the progression? One is the attachment to the fruit and the work. One's attached to the fruit, the work gives the fruit. One gives up the attachment for the fruit, but one likes that work because it's akin to the nature, it's very natural. Right? Then at one point, one is just doing it because it pleases Krishna. Whether I like it or not doesn't matter. You know? So there's no need to give it up. Krishna's pointing out here that even a intelligent and the knowledgeable person, or advanced person, doesn't give up their nature. Even the person who's come to the prescribed platform, he doesn't have to perform. He has nothing to do. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill by the discharge of his prescribed duties. Nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So, in the conditioned state, we need to do them. We depend upon them. Because it is our means of purification. But for the person on the Brahma Bhuta, he doesn't require that. So Nishkam Karma, he doesn't require. He just performs bhakti. But he doesn't give up those activities because he has to set example. Unless he wants to be an avatut or be a bhajananandi.
So you say we should try to give up the desire. If we did the activities we like to do, it's going to be
It comes with time. It's natural. It just comes.
No,
it just means we're giving up the desire for the result. Krishna says the result, the desire for sense gratification in general, means we're giving up the desire for the specific result and the desire that creates that result. We're giving up the idea that we are the doer. And we understand I am a servant of Krishna, and we do it for Krishna. Right? It doesn't say that we should give up the desire to do the work. Right? Because it says even a man in knowledge performs according to his nature. That's Bhrijan makes that point in that when the difference between Nishkam Karma and pure bhakti, you know, or let's say pure unalloyed devotional service, because Prabhupada calls when you're on the platform of devotional sadhana bhakti and you're doing it, you want to please Krishna by it, you know, you want to do whatever you can, how much is your realization, but whatever you have, you're doing it for Krishna. He calls that pure devotional service. So basically what is happening here is Bhrijan is making the distinction between pure devotional service, meaning this, you know, especially the Nishkam Karma, like that, and pure unalloyed devotional service, where this means there's no tinge of anything material anymore, which we would call prema bhakti, like that. So just for showing the ladder, the yoga ladder, he makes very clearly these distinctions. But for the practical application of anyone who has to sit and hear this Gita, you don't have to necessarily go that far. Not for the general, like that. Basically, only the Madhyam really has to understand very clearly this difference. Because the Kanista is too hazy, it's too far ahead. He just has to know he has to do what he's supposed to do, and do it as best he can for Krishna without desiring the material result, with knowledge that he's not the body and he's serving of Krishna. And he endeavors for that. The Madhyama can start to distinguish between these fine points and understand what's going on here. You know, to the Kanista it's just one big, you know, thing. And then, you know, it's kind of at the top end that there's these advanced people. But generally he always will put the Madhyams in with himself and the Uttams on that side. But the Uttams put the Madhyams with them and the Kanistas on this side. Huh? Whatever. You know? And then the Madhyams can understand both sides, though there's not clear realization. But they can understand the principle. Right? It just comes by the nature of the position. You know? Like that. So therefore we don't have to worry as much about that. He's making the distinction he makes in the beginning just so you understand this. Because he points out that Baladev and Prabhupada they call everything devotional service. Though you're in different stages of maturity. Like that. But Vishwanath, because he gets into these technical points of specifically showing the transforming from Kanista into Madhyam into Uttam. He points that out very clearly. He makes these distinctions just so you can understand step by step where you are. Like that. That's the purpose of it. But one doesn't take that out of the context that the whole thing is called bhakti. Though we understand that the pure bhakti on the platform of love is on the after the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Because before that, the conditioned nature does get in the way to some degree. Right? Like that. But what we call nishkam karma, then Prabhupada calls advanced devotional service. So this is an advanced devotee, senior devotee, a preacher, sadhu, guru sadhu shastra, sadhu. So this is something very elevated. Though compared to pure unalloyed devotional service, it may not be up to that platform. But compared to the Kanista platform, it's way beyond. It means you have Kanista, and then there's a big gap. Then you have Madhyam, and right next to that is Uttam. Right? The same time as the Kanista and the Madhyam still have conditioning, so they're right next to each other in that way. But in understanding, there's a vast difference. Even though they're right next to each other, this is a very interesting point. The only thing I can think of to illustrate it clearly, I mean, it comes to my mind, you know, because we deal with kids all the time, is the difference between an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old. They're only 1 year's difference, but what they understand about the functioning in the material world, in other words, the attraction between male and female, is like night and day. But a 12-year-old knows the principle that the older, the teenagers and the married adults know. They don't understand the details. They don't have the adhikar to enter into it. But they know what's going on. You know? The 11-year-old looks at the girls and fine. The 12-year-old looks at the girls and he's in trouble. One would say, well, they're just right next to each other. But it's totally another category. So the difference between the two is vast. One you call innocent, one's not innocent anymore. How you deal with someone innocent is you try to broach this, that, go all the way around the edge and never talk about it and just try to get as close as can to explain what you need and to get them to, you know, behave themselves. A 12-year-old, you can just say straight. So it's the difference between the Madhyam and Kanista because of this point. They understand who they are. Right? They can see the Lord, equals, juniors, superiors. They don't mix them up at all. Kanista mixes the whole thing right up. They can understand God and Guru and that's it. Everybody else is a mushmash, you know. The new bhakta can talk about the GBC. Yeah, this guy, this, that. That's the example. They cannot tell what is going on. It's just a hodgepodge for them. Therefore, they follow their duties as a new person and follow the authority and do what they're supposed to do. Their duty is not to sit around and make judgments on other GBC men. Other GBC men and senior devotees, they're supposed to do that. But if they do that, you know, it's offensive. The other senior men do that, that's their duty. They have to follow the etiquette, do it properly, but it is their duty. The new person, he sits and talks this, Maya. That's because he's a Kanista. Therefore, we say misgivings create issues. And any issue that you have, you can take back to some material position that somebody doesn't like. Each and every one. They're not coming from a transcendental point. Like that. It's just a misgiving on some point of the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness that I don't like. But the Kanista can't understand that. So he thinks it's very important, very philosophical, because he's thought of it as pretty good. So this whole thing is made. The whole point is everybody, no matter what your position, is encouraged. Right? Because the devotional path is very long. At the same time, as one associates with devotees, avoids offense, and that is very short. In one life, you can go back to Godhead. But what you're going between when one starts and when one finishes is a huge, is from here to below Vrindavan. So we're covering that distance in one lifetime. So it's pretty big. But by the mercy of the Lord and the devotees, it becomes very small. The whole material world is reduced down to the size of a cat's footprint. But if you absorb yourself in it, it's a huge ocean. Huge ocean. And you can't cross it on your own. And by the mercy of Guru, it becomes reduced. You can step over it. So that's the thing. It's when Krishna's involved, on Krishna's terms, it works like a charm. We don't involve Krishna, or we do it on our own terms, as he says here. Ones who reject this due to envy, they have a lot of problems. So the main thing here is just everyone accepts their duty, does it. For Krishna without attachment. No, that's what Krishna is pointing out. Just to make a fine point, Bhurijan's made this difference between Sakam and Nishkam. Basically, Sakam puts his own desires as more prominent than the devotional process. He's a devotee, wants devotional service, but he just priorities are different. Nishkam means devotional service is prominent. I am conditioned, I engage my nature. The Sakam is, I have my conditioned nature, I want to follow that. And I'll also do something for Krishna. Like that. So it's a slight, the activities will be exactly the same. And we see even the Uttam, his activities are exactly the same. Prabhupada also followed very nicely the rules of sannyas. Right? You don't find ladies doing things for him that were not allowed. They're not massaging his feet. They're not his personal servants. You know? Like that. They would only travel if they were with their husband. Or if he went to a temple, they may cook there, but when he leaves, they don't go with him. You know? They're not doing any personal, directly to him, puja. He's just following the sannyas dharma. He doesn't have to follow that. He's nityasiddha. But he does it to set example. If he didn't do that, then there'd be a lot of crazy things going on. You know, we think things are crazy now. Huh? Did? Yeah, so. But generally those things aren't. I'm more careful about things. So like that is... The duties must be, so whatever one's position, one must follow. That's the basic principle. You know? And then it becomes very nice. So the whole point is that the whole thing is made as nice as possible and as encouraging as possible, because it is very encouraging. You know, very simply, you just do what you're doing and just try to work on removing the desire. That desire is anartha. You remove the anarthas, we become nishta, fixed. Like that. So that comes through. So if you want to know what are those positions, removing that, the doubts and the attachments, then you know, Vishwanath points those out in anartha nivritti. You have your first stages, those six stages, you know the six stages? First one is utsamayi, where you think you're, you've just heard about it, you've taken it up. You know, it's like the new bhakti. Suddenly, you know, tomorrow he's going to be a pure devotee. You know, like that. But he doesn't really understand. Next is you know, they become enthusiastic one day, next day, you know, depressed, next day fired up, next day depressed, next day fired up. You know, so it's but when they are fired up, it's it actually has a more substance than when they first heard. Then third is they can't quite tell what's the best thing to do, and you know the mind is giving trouble. Should I do this or should I do that? And so many things. The example he gives is, should I take sannyas or should I get married? You know, not quite sure, you know. By this path, then this is good and all things, but then also this, he recommends doing duties and work. But at the same time, you know, just you can't really tell where you're situated. You don't know properly how to engage yourself. Then the next stage, once that you get fixed in that, then is war with Maya. Then it's when you get to this, means now you've figured out what are your duties. So now you're acting, now you've really started doing very nicely what Krishna is talking about here. You're doing your devotional activities and you're doing it for him. So now Maya, you know, wakes up. Before that is, you heard about devotional service, you started devotional service, you're proud of it. Yes, you know, yes, big devotees. You're already in Maya. You know, because your ego's there. So if you're not careful, the ego's going to take you off and you may go away. Then, you know, you're fired up and then you're weak. You're fired up and you're weak. So it's not steady. So even if you're fired up, how long you'll be fired up? You're going to be in Maya again anyway. Then you can't figure out what you're doing and all that, and you're still bewildered. But then when you figure out, this is what I'm supposed to do, then there's a war. Then she steps in. Because now it's like, you're doing a service and you're doing it for Krishna. And so then she comes in and bang. So then there's a fight with that. And then one crosses that. This is the point, basically, from what I can understand, is the border between the Kanista and the Madhya. Like this. Because he breaks it up into, you have Kanista Kanista, Madhya Kanista, Uttam Kanista. Madhyam, I mean Uttam. Kanista Madhyam, Madhyam Madhyam, Uttam Madhyam. Kanista Uttam, Madhyam Uttam, Uttam Uttam. So he gives nine phases in this. So then Kanista Kanista will be, you're just associating with devotees, you've heard Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, like that. Then Bhajana Kriya. And like that, then is that would be your Madhyam Kanista. And you've started very seriously and you come up, but then you go through all these stages that we just talked about. You know, you get fired up and this and that and so many different things. But it's weak, it's not steady, it's unsteady, anishta. Then, when war with Maya, that is Uttam Kanista, because one is taken. Anarthas are there, and I'm going to fight, and I'm going to get rid of them. Otherwise, before, it's just they're there, and what can I do? But when you actually decide, I'm going to stop criticizing devotees, I'm going to stop sitting around and just talking to Japa, I'm going to, you know, do these different things, then Maya comes in. Once one's crossed that, and one has the determination to do that, then you come to the next state. Then from what I can understand there, then that is Kanista Madhyam. That is on the platform of Nishta, but it's not so fixed. Because then the next stage is then where one has difficulty. You decide today, you know, I'm going to get up early, I'm going to chant all my rounds for Mangalartik, and it doesn't happen. You know, so you make all kinds of plans. I'm going to sit and I'm going to read all day today. It doesn't happen, you know. But it's not a problem of Maya bothering you. It's just a matter of just your practice and your regulation, and your mind gets distracted in other devotional things. But it doesn't, what you fix it on and plan is not there. Then when that becomes steady, you know, like that, then you get to the next, then you get to the Madhyam is fixed in it. He does nicely. Then all the facilities start coming. Then the facilities come, then now it's, if you don't become proud, then you can move into Ruchi. But you don't try to take the little bit of facility. You know, it's considered like the waves on the ocean. You know, they're small compared to the ocean. The ocean of bhakti, then there's little waves of dharma, artha, kama, moksha are there. So you take some of that for yourself. Then that's Ranga Taringini, you're riding the waves. Rather than being in the ocean, you're riding the waves. And if one's not careful, that can then again turn around and you can fall from there. But that's within the Madhyama. When that goes, then you come to Ruchi. Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundrim. You don't want all these things. You lost the taste for these. So that is like, the Madhyam Madhyam is like, you know, doesn't have that desire for these things. So it means we can see from there, they're interchangeable. So because of this, because the description I've just given on these different stages, that's Vishwanath. So we can see that's why Vishwanath makes this clear distinction. But this is all devotional service. We don't count it not as devotional service. It's just the stages that go through. Okay. Does that make any sense?
Not necessarily that if a person has a short of the experience of those that is having a
I mean, what we just in Nartanaviti. Generally, you'll find they'll be there. They may be there very short. Just like you see the acharyas, when they take up devotional service, they go through all the stages. They may do it in a day, you know, but they go through those stages like that. They always go through. But it's just how quickly they go. Like Krishna went to Gurukul, you know, and he heard from the teacher everything like this, and when it came to 64 arts, he learned one art per day. You know, one of them is music, right? Perfected music. Normally music would take you, you know, a good 5-6 years, at least now, to learn. He learned it one day, you know. That included instrumental music, which generally takes 10 years. They learned it one day. You know, they learned drama. You know, it takes a while to learn drama and become a good actor. They learned it one day. Painting and all the different things, they learned that one day. So they went through it all. But they just did it very quickly. So in the same, you see the acharyas go through these stages, but they just go through very fast. You know? Like that. Was is that does let's say we advance because we follow the order of the spiritual master, and the spiritual master has desires, like Prabhupada had desired that his books be distributed. So does one make advancement by following that, doing that service, following that order, even if it's not necessarily one's nature? And will one advance, or will one fall down from that position? So then, as Prabhupada mentioned, that one purport, even if one's not exactly situated in prescribed duties, but doing something for Krishna, is advancement. Otherwise, how is it that, when we mentioned before, in Anartha Nivritti, there's that stage we don't quite know what to do. What is our position? What is our prescribed duties? It's still within devotional service, because you're doing service. It just won't be so strongly situated. The point is that you also have to, this is another discussion, because you have the difference between the gona and the mukhya activities. Mukhya mean those things directly liberate you, because those are always going on. Transcendental, pure transcendental activities, and gona means those that support. Like that. So preaching is always, that's one of the things, kirtan. So it's if you see it as kirtan, then one will never have any difficulty. One may find it is difficult to do, or one doesn't have the nature to do, and this and that. One may find something, but one will find some other way to support the preaching. You know, that the direct preaching by doing something that supports it, or some other field of preaching, like that. But if one simply sees it as collecting money, then unless one has the nature to collect money and do it in that way, then of course it's going to become very difficult. But the point is that the spiritual master doesn't just have one desire. There's one desire, is that, yes, the living entities all go back to Godhead by, you know, taking shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission under the direction of Rupa Goswami, as given to us by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's what Srila Prabhupada wants. So now in that is book distribution and, you know, the temples and college preaching and you know, gurukuls and, you know, raising our families nicely, and all so many different things are there. Cow protection, agriculture, it's all part. So whatever is your nature, you do that. But he points out is how, right on the front edge, you know, because when you have an army, there is the front line. And then behind that's the other troops, and then the supporting, and then your whole administration, and then all your manufacturing, and then all your financing, and all your, you know, different decisions like that. So it's all there. So that front line is book distribution and other forms of direct preaching. We're actually interfacing with people who are not Krishna conscious and bringing them onto the boat of Krishna consciousness. So that's the front line. Right? But everything else is important. Otherwise, it would be very hard to distribute books if you didn't eat. And you only eat because somebody cooks. You know, so... Do persons on the front line get more mercy? Naturally, it is a very special endeavor, so it's very, one is very dear. It's very, but one still has to be careful. One doesn't become proud, and all those kinds of things. You generally see those who can distribute books for a long time, then. They don't become proud, they don't think they're the doer. And ones that do it for a shorter time sometimes think they are. You know, like that happens. These who are good book distributors and are known as good book distributors, the ones that are still doing it today from Prabhupada's time and then doing it the last 15, 20 years like that, you know, 10 years, they go on day in, day out. It's just, they know they're not the doer. Like that. They have to be detached from the results. They're not doing it because someone will read the score in the morning and go jai. The ones that are doing it so that their name will be read in the morning and someone will go jai and they get the cake at the end of the day and all that, they're the ones that only last a few years. You know? So here is the difference. Someone's attached to the result. You can only do it a certain amount of time because you only get so much result. You were a big book distributor. The only basically material result you can get from it is a little bit of facility and a little bit of glory, and that's about it. You know? It doesn't change. It's the same jaya in the morning and the same pat on the back, and it's basically from the same people. You know? So then one has to go into other fields to get more, you know, to expand that. And then those who can work without that attachment, they can continue.
So it seems that the ones that continue doing that service are more fun.
The ones who can continue more than that, unless it was seen that someone had a nature, he did it because he spoke, he wanted to please in this, and then they situate themselves in another service and do very excellent in that and do something very dynamic. Point is to be situated somewhere in the preaching mission, helping in whatever way one can. That's the principle. That's the principle. That. So it means guru, sadhu, and shastra. So here's the shastra. And here is what the guru and sadhus are going to base what they speak on. It means all preachers of ISKCON, whatever they say, it comes in line with what Prabhupada says, they're bona fide preachers. It doesn't come in line with what Prabhupada says, even though it's based on shastra, they're not bona fide representatives of Srila Prabhupada. And a member of ISKCON has no obligation to follow what they say. So the books, therefore, are the basis. They become very important. The books are distributed because people get that, they read that, they benefited from that. We have the books. There's a lot of books. I mean, Lord, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took them 6 years to find the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, so that means there were not books in every house. So Prabhupada is trying to get books in every house so that there will be books somewhere. So anyone who's sincere and wants devotional service, they can come in contact with these books very easily. They're either already in their own house, or they're in the local bookstore, or they're in a friend's house, or another relative's house, you know, or even sometimes in the garbage can. You know, they're there. And then they can come in contact. So that makes it very important. But anything being done under the guidance of what Prabhupada's given us, then that is when we'll make advancement. So does that mean then one should be distributing books because that pleases the spiritual master, and then if you can't do that, then you fall back on one of these other services? Point is it's all part of the mission. So it's those who have that nature, then they can do that very nicely. Those that have other natures, that has to be done. Because the book distribution doesn't go on just on its own. You know? I mean, you have Gopi Puranadana sitting in some corner of the planet somewhere. You know, probably never leaves his room except to go to the toilet or something, and just with his nose in the books. But if he doesn't do that, the books don't get published. You know, somebody else is not there, you know, putting the ink in the printing press, and washing it off his hands, and that's his service. Then the books aren't printed, and then the books don't go out. If someone doesn't know how to control money and run all the finances and all this, no books are going to come out. Someone doesn't know how to run the go-downs and manage how to ship them and, you know, knows all these kind of things and that, and books don't go out. You know, if someone doesn't know how to manage your temple or sankirtan, you know, department or party, the books don't go out, you know. If you're traveling sankirtan, someone doesn't know how to drive, then it makes it difficult also. Like that. So, I mean, it's, everything's important. Like that. It's all important. It's just, you know, we just try to fit in where we can. We all understand.
Well, I think today, the devotees see the big picture is after the conditioned soul has received the book, if his interest is kindled, he'll want to come and see Krishna consciousness in action.
Hmm.
And if what is in action doesn't match up to what he found in the book, he'll also feel in people. It's very nice, but you're another group who can't practice what you preach.
Mm.
So then I'm just again disillusioned, like I am with every other mainstream religion. So even somebody sweeping a path, someone's worshipping the deities nicely, someone's cooking wonderful foodstuffs offered to the deities, and then they say, oh, this is the spiritual world. Mm. But if it's anything short of what they saw in the book, then again, they're feeling cheated or disillusioned. Mm. So I think Prabhupada wanted that broad picture was there so that it's all complementary.
Yes, that's a very good point. I think that's good. So it's interesting, that point. I think there was I'm not sure how they did it, but it was kind of, some kind of survey was done. And it was a very prominent thing that many people felt when it came to answers to spiritual questions, the Hare Krishna's got it down.
Hmm.
But they just find that them as personalities are a little difficult to deal with. But the philosophy is like many people just is that you want an answer, they got it.
Hmm.
Like that. There's no question. The Haris have the answer. But they just find that they're just too strange to work with because they, you know, we just don't practice the lifestyle that we're professing, like that. So it's a matter of in other words, Krishna here is taking a center line. You know, in other words, he's showing the razor's edge. You know, because one side is karma and one side is jnana. So you say you just stay right in the middle. With knowledge and activities, then you go on, right? If on one side the razor blade is karma, if you put that on, you're going to fall off that side. And if you, on the other side, if you put gyan, you're going to fall off on that side. So it's like if you're tightrope walking, you have a stick to balance you, then it has to be equal on both sides. So that farther you go on one, the farther on the other. You'll see the acharyas are like that. The same acharya who can talk rasa shastra can also take a word in the Vedanta Sutra and break it up into little pieces and argue for pages over it. You don't find an acharya who can only chop rasa shastra and can't get down and, you know, fight with the Mayavadis. Nor do you find one that could only fight with the Mayavadis and doesn't know it's in the other side. So they're balanced. So the same Krishna is just saying that edge. So the tendency of the Western culture is it's one or the other. It's just book distribution. Everything else is Maya. Or it's just developing social development and communities and relationships and you know, book distribution, this and that. You know, what's the use? You distribute books and then people read and what do they see? So stop the books. Mm-hmm. I've heard both sides.
Right.
I've heard people are making devotees. Others discourage them. Why do you make more devotees? You know, they're only going to come in and what are they going to see? But no, that person knows how to make the... How many people can know how to make devotees? Right? How many people can go out, preach, and that person joins? Not so many. At least not today. Like that. So that needs to be done. But those who understand how to train and how to make the... They should be doing that. So both go on. So we can't have this pendulum. You know, it's this or it's that. No, it all goes on at once and it's balanced. So you have your city centers, you have your rural communities. You have your frontline book distributors, you have those who are, you know, doing things that are supporting. As Krishna also says here in the Gita, one who preaches to my, gives this knowledge to the devotees is most dear. So it's like, you bring the person in the door, that's the first step. Now you have to actually turn them, now you have to bring them from stepped in the door, which means they've gone from Shraddha to now Sadhu Sangha, but you have to bring them up to Prema Bhakti. So if you think, I got him in the door, work finished. 2 months Bhakti program, and then that's it. Then we've missed the point that after the 2 months Bhakti program, you still have to go through, you know, Vajna Kriya, Narta Navridi, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and then Prema. Right? And in the meantime, even on prema, you can't bump into the Mayavad philosophy and take it seriously. You may fall from there. So it's like we miss something if we only think like that. At the same time as if we think only social development, because social development is just prescribed duties. And that's also just the platform that's most important for the Kanista, because they identify with those prescribed duties. Mm-hmm. The Madhyama does it because he sees it's the nature, it's the easiest service he can do. He doesn't have to break his head. It's natural, and Krishna says, even an advanced person, an intelligent person, will do that. It's just natural, like that. You know, Lord Chaitanya was preaching here, a lot of trouble, he went to Puri, better field, you know. If preaching here is going to be slow and arduous and not much result, preaching in another place is going to be really big. It's natural you go to that place. So if I have a nature to do one service and I can do it very nicely and get involved and be fully absorbed, why I won't do that? Like that. But the Kanista is much more attached to that thing and identifies with that. No, he understands. The knowledge is there, is gradually developing. You know? Like that. So it's one has to be very, very careful in that. Because otherwise, all these mentalities are beginning on a neophyte platform. Like that.
That's why it seems, Maharaj, that statement of Mahaprabhu to Haridas Thakur, he said, some preach but they cannot practice. Some practice but they cannot preach. But you are doing both.
Yeah.
So it seems always Krishna stressing this balance, this not the one who tries to eat too little or eat too this part of balance.
Right, again, it's a balance.
And for our movement, again, this is the broad picture.
If someone made that point about Srila Prabhupada, he was just like the most balanced, natural person. No strain, no nothing strange, no weirdities in the personality, no nothing. Just so natural and you know, just so easy to work with any situation, anything. It's just perfectly balanced. Just we don't get too much into using those terms. Mm. Otherwise it floats off into New Age or something. Aikido is when you become perfectly balanced like that. So we don't need that kind of balance.
I understand that all the spiritual activities are on the same platform for the people. But like in the spiritual world, some of the more pleasing spiritual power is definitely what is higher. So certainly, although the cook is looking for the sanctity of all this, certainly doing something very pleasing. And it's all on the same level. There are certain activities that are more pleasing to the spiritual master than other activities. Whoever opens the senses in Japan, other than the body. If one considers, is it my nature to do that? Should I do it? Or if he says, okay, I'll just do it because it's most pleasing to the spiritual master. So when does one make the discrimination? Okay, this is not my nature, but I'll do it because I can see that this activity is going to be very pleasing. Or one thing is that, okay, it's not my nature, therefore I shouldn't do it. It should make it dangerous.
Can you hear it? Mm. Yeah. Okay, so in here we also have to consider what's emergency and what's normal service. So if we feel or we have confidence we can do, then we try. Okay. If we don't feel we can do, and there's others who are competent to do, we naturally let them do, because Krishna said, better let others do what they can do and you do what you can do. If there's no one to do, then we make it to try. And Krishna, and that will very much please the spiritual master and Krishna, because you've made that endeavor, you've tried. So whether you're successful or not in the specific opening of the temple, that doesn't matter. The endeavor is what's important. So it depends on the mentality. If that mentality is just there, the spiritual master wants this, I don't see anyone else stepping forward to do it, I'll do it. Then that's very pleasing. Because Krishna gives surrender fully, sadhana, and then this work for Krishna means according to the nature of prescribed duty. Still, you're going to open the center, you still have to act according to the prescribed duties for someone opening the center. You know, and then when you have devotees, you have to act as someone who's a manager has to do it. Even though it may not be fully your nature, you still have to follow the prescribed duties of that nature. You can't follow your own. Let us say you have a business mentality, then no one's there to run the temple. You run the temple, right? But one has to apply the things of management that go there. It means you have to protect and give shelter to the devotees. You can't put your business mentality on top of that. You may use it to collect funds and maintain a nice temple, but you can't use it in your dealing with devotees, because a manager doesn't deal with the devotees based on business. He does it according to what is going to be the proper way to situate them and engage them, so that they'll be Krishna conscious. So if you only see that this one does this and we get more of this, though maybe not so good for the Krishna consciousness, but it makes more money and this one can this, then that's not good. So even though one doesn't have that particular nature, whatever you do, you have to follow the prescribed duties of that service. Like if you're going to be a pujari, then you have to follow the nature that goes with those prescribed duties. And then if you can't, then you'll find, you'll do it for a certain amount of time, and then you may have to let someone else do it. But that is where the problem comes, is that we don't follow prescribed duties that go with the thing. Therefore, socially it makes a mess. Devotional service goes on. There's probably a mess. Even if you don't follow your prescribed duties and try to do something for Krishna, results there. But then also don't expect that there will necessarily be great social interaction. And then that same person shouldn't, years down the line, when they've gotten out of management because they couldn't do it, now they're sitting in some community somewhere, along with, 50 other temple presidents, ex-temple presidents, GBCs, sannyasis, and everybody. And now get on the case of all the managers. That also has to be accepted. You've accepted that I'm not a manager in this way, and I'm taking care of my family or this or that, you accept the prescribed duties for someone doing that. So now you're a member of the congregation, like that, or you're just an independent person. It's not your business to have comments on everything. You can have them, but keep them to yourself. But if you get vocal about them, that's for another manager to do, or someone who can advise the managers. And even if one has done it and someone doesn't know, you have the experience, you know what to do, though you can't do it, you know, it's a regular thing, then it should be presented also according to the prescribed method in a gentle fashion and trying to help and all that. But it's like, you know, like this, and you get very strong and overly strong about it, that's not following the prescribed duties either. So it just creates a social difficulties. So whatever you're doing, you follow the prescribed duties of that. And then you situate yourself accordingly. Saying that in the beginning there was an emphasis on doing emergency service in the beginning of the movement. So yes, the preaching and all that. But at the same time, as if one would absorb the teachings as one went along and matured, everyone would naturally just start fitting into where they fit in a more detailed picture. And it would still maintain that central life of the preaching and the dynamics of the movement. If one doesn't imbibe, one just thinks, I'll stay on that platform. But you change your whole methodology, anything. When you first go, you all brahmacharis, few married persons. You know, everybody had nothing. You know? Like that, I remember in brahmacharis, everything fit in the DTG box. That included your sleeping bag, you know? So you can understand, it was basically that's all you had. You had a sleeping bag, you had two dhotis, a couple of copans, and you know, maybe a book or two. And even that, many temples was discouraged, they had a library. Some temples they didn't even have that. Some temples you took your clothes, put them in the laundry, including your copans. And the next day they had all these like boxes filled with dhotis and copans and kurtas and everything like that. You just went down and picked out one. Whoever got there first got what they liked. Whoever got there last ended up with what was left. Like that. And then, I mean, they had nothing. Everyone was happy. So you can't say, yeah, well, just like then. But just like then also everybody had nothing. So you can't be sitting there in your fancy house with your cars and, you know, all these things and then professing that unless you're willing to do it. You have to see that was the root, that is the principles are there. And the details of life on how someone can live in sadhana, on the platform of sadhana bhakti. But if you need to come into the next stage of working for Krishna, then you have to add those things in that Krishna says. Prabhupada says here, and the Prabhupada he makes it very clear what a brahmachari does, what a grihastha does, what a grihastha man does, what a grihastha woman does, what an unmarried girl does, you know, what children do, what parents do, what vanaprasthas do, what sannyasis do, brahmachari. He's very clear. It's not like it's fuzzy and not, it's very clear. You know? I mean, it's just a matter of whether we'll accept it. So as you drop into that, you get married, and you follow the rules that Krishna's Prabhupada says, what you do is grihastha. And the mentality and all the things go along with it. And then it works very nicely. But we can't misunderstand this point. You know? Because we'll say things aren't developing socially, but that's because generally you'll find each individual hasn't developed. And the development is not on someone else. Right? Because it'll say, well, no one's training us, or the books are there, right there. Right? How many have read the Gita and understood, okay, I'm a man, I'm a grihastha. I got to perform the duties of a grihastha. You know, I can't decide to, you know, run off with, you know, somebody else's wife or neglect my kids or, you know, not do this stuff. It goes on. And these people own the Bhagavad Gita. Right? But it's, so you can't blame it on someone else. So they'll try, always, the conditioned soul will always blame it on someone else. Authorities didn't teach me the GBC, the this, the that. The same person complaining used to be the GBC, used to be the temple president, used to be the sannyasa, used to be all these things. You know? And they were in charge at the time when they said they should have been being trained. So then what's going on? So the point is that each individual has to accept for themselves that when Krishna says perform the prescribed duties, that means I, whatever position I'm in, I do it. And Prabhupada's given it. It's very clear. Maybe we don't understand it. That's another discussion. But we can't say it's not there. No one told me. It's there. It's just a matter of whether we accept it. So this is what Arjuna, Krishna is saying all these things and Arjuna is not accepting it. That's what this chapter is all about. Arjuna said, okay, now you've told me to give up abominable activities and use my intelligence. You know, so intelligence means I just sit down and do nothing. So how is it you're telling me to sit down and do nothing, but you're telling me to fight? I don't understand. So even Arjuna gets bewildered. So the Gita is there to remove these doubts. That's the purpose of the Gita. How to remove these doubts. Like that. And then we can go on.
It's interesting how Krishna says exactly the same thing as Arjuna in this chapter, as Arjuna said in the other chapter. Arjuna said, if I do my duty and kill everyone, then bring unwanted punishment. And Krishna says,
if you go to the forest, you will create unwanted punishment. You'll punish Shankara.
He said, Arjuna is saying, better that I don't do my duty, because otherwise I'll create unwanted punishment. And in this chapter, Krishna says, if I don't do my duty, even I work, if I don't do my duty, then
using the same point. It's very good. It'd be interesting. I don't know the technicalities of nyaya. That would be one kind of nyaya. But just use the same point and just give 180 degree opposite thing to it.
Also, he tells him.
Krishna's a clever person. Interesting. Saying exactly the same thing, just, yeah, you're right, you know, go to the forest and all these people follow your example and then sin will be incurred. You say, wait a minute, no, sin's incurred if I fight. No, if you fight, you're doing your duty, no sin is incurred because you're not attached to the result. You're attached to the result, okay, you get, you're not attached, you get sin. But you are leaving your duty, that will give you sin. Because you're attached to not doing your duty. So that will give you sin. You know, so it's kind of like it turns the head around. It's natural also, because just the parental rasa. Many times they just do that to kids, even in fun. They say something, and you say the same thing in the opposite. You know, you just turn it around on them, and then they sit there and they're bewildered. And that's just part of the parental rasa also. So Krishna now is the guru. So he's doing these things.
He also says that you're saying that you want to give up prescribed duties and you're going to take sannyas. He said, how can you do that? Because the system is you form prescribed duties, you become purified, when you're purified you can take sannyas. You're saying, I don't want to do my duties and take sannyas. How can you do that?
Yeah.
I don't describe it. Yeah. She says that I am situated in access.
from 15. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice.
So how does the transcendence, how do you see that it's being situated? How do you see that Krishna transcendence was being
assumed? He's pointing out here, Gurujan, is that if you take it back, you always get back to Vishnu. So you're doing the yajna because it brings rain. The rain is given by Indra. The power to do that is given by Vishnu. So if Krishna's made the rules, right, as Vyasadeva has written them, like that, he is those rules, because he is sacrifice. So by following that, it is. It's just a matter of what result you'll get, depending upon your degree of realization. Because if you are nicely, how do you say, if you realize Vishnu at the other end, then it becomes devotional service. So that sacrifice takes you back to Godhead. You see only up to the Brahman realization, will get you there. You see only up to the fruit of result, it will only get you up to there. So the activity is made. See, the point is that we're trying to come to the platform of always being engaged in Krishna's service. And so the interaction, the social interaction and different things is already set in the spiritual world, all centered around Krishna. So we're trying to bring that mood here, that all of my activities, my life, my interactions, my business, everything is all for pleasing Krishna. I mean, in Golok Vrindavan, they're there, the gopis are taking their milk and yogurt to the market to sell, and then Krishna stops them, and then there's the pastime of taking of the tax, you know, or his boat things, you know, the boatman, because they have to cross the Jamuna, you know, like that, so then he's taking tax, you know, or he harasses them as the boatman, or the pastime in Manasi Ganga, they want to get to the other side, and then Krishna starts, you know, making the boat sink and tells them to keep throwing their pots, everything overboard. You know, so they're going to do their business because they're cowherd women, and you know, they're Vaishyas, they do business like that. But it's all for just making opportunities for Krishna to meet them, and that if they weren't carrying yogurt and all that, then how is Krishna going to meet them? You know, they have to go outside to do that. It means they're supposed to be sitting in their house, right? But they get to get out of their house because they're going to the market. So that provides an opportunity for Krishna to meet them. They have to take their bath, so they go to the Jamuna to take their bath, or they go to Pavan Sarovar to take their bath, so then Krishna can go meet them there, right? Cowherd boys, they're just taking out their cows because as Vaishyas they raise their cows, they get the milk from that, they get their products, they sell, they make their money, they pay their tax to the Kshatriyas in Mathura. But it's an opportunity. Now Krishna can go with the cowherd boys and play with them and, you know, be like frogs and, you know, yell in wells and throw bale food around and steal each other's lunch. And so it's just, and it's a medium for doing. But how they do it, they take the cows out in the morning, they come back in the evening. Right? The dust raised from the cows is very pleasing to Krishna. So it's considered very auspicious. So when we reflect that into here, we follow those prescribed duties that are in line with the Acharya's Vidas. Right? For pleasing Krishna. It's the same thing. We're going to follow the culture for pleasing Krishna. So we establish in principle the same thing that's going on in the spiritual realm. They're performing their duties without any desire for result for themselves. Like that. They simply want to please Krishna with it. So it looks the same. It's just that they just want to please Krishna. It's just a way to please Krishna. Because their love is manifest in a particular way. They have a particular form. Because our conditioned nature, conditioned desire, we manifest the conditioned form in a particular way. So now we get the opportunity to follow the same principles as the residents of Vrindavan. But by just transforming that into service for Krishna. So their form and activities and situations based on their attachment to Krishna. Ours is based on their attachment to the material world. We're getting that opportunity to, in the same principle as them, follow that. Just, they have love, it naturally happens. Here we don't have that love, so we have to follow it, the rules and regulations to get to that platform of love. So in the beginning, for us, the rules and regulations are important. Later they're not. We perform the same activities.
The activities and everything waking up in the morning is an act of sacrifice.
Yes. Yeah. When we get up and first thing remember the Lord, chant the holy name, that's sacrifice.
That is this.
Yeah. Because
that's the name.
Yeah. And then when we remember the spiritual master, offer obeisances, Krishna's dead. That's sad. Right? Then, because, you know, we've been told we should roll up the bed, you do that, and all that, that's sad. Because we're doing it for Krishna, under the order of the spiritual master, Guru Sadhana Shastra. Then we go and we, you know, brush our teeth and clean our tongue and take our bath and use the toilet and clean ourselves and do all that according to the rules there. That's also sacrifice, because we're doing it for Krishna.
So he's present in that sacrifice. How do you perceive?
Well, we can either basically have the you know, the rules and regulations. We have the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes. These are the way we can see Krishna. So we see in it, the spiritual master said to do this. So in this way we're seeing Krishna. Like that. Or you know, and then we see it as part of the lifestyle, the mission. We can chant while we're doing these things. Remember the Lord, remember the Lord's qualities, remember the pastimes. Basically the first principle, the main principle is that it's been given by the Lord to the Acharyas and they have given it to us. Like all these, whatever is in there in nectar devotion, that's all the devotional side of, means the devotional philosophy, devotional understanding, that devotional mood, and then the technicalities that are there on the progression of the devotional development. That's all been given by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami. He's written that, the Acharyas have written books on that. Then he's given the aspect of the ritual and establishing our identity as Krishna's servant. Right? And the progression from material consciousness up to spiritual consciousness. And all the rituals that go in between, the deity worship and all the sadhana and all, he's instructed all that to Sanatana Goswami. Like that. And then these come down to us. And basically, the Goswamis are writing on Lord Chaitanya's points, what he's giving from Bhagavatam. Like that. And that comes to us, and that's our complete, basically our complete process and rituals right there. That is our prescribed duties. That is our sadhana and our varnashram. But more than that they need to give than supporting Sanatana Goswamis is Gopal Bhatta Goswamis and the samskaras and all these different things. Pursuing that. You know, pursuing Rupa Goswami's points there, then Jiva Goswami writes the Sandarbhas, the other Acharyas, Narottam writes the songs. You know. Then Rupa's talked about the advanced stages of the process, Krishnadas Kaviraj then wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita Govindam Namrita. So those aspects are there. You know, Vishwanath is then given more details, finer details, technical details of what Rupa Goswami is given. You know, take one verse or something and write that into a book. You know, one point Rupa makes and then give details on it. Like this. So each Acharya then adds and expands, but it's on those principles. The same thing that's been given. And that's just not something different. It's not. just a matter of seeing the connection between all of them. Is it the particular terminology brings out a particular aspect, or a particular aspect has a particular thing that needs some tools and everything that are there. You know, like the tools of cooking are going to be, the actual cooking process are going to be different than the tools of preparation. You cannot cut up a cauliflower with a karai, you know, and it's going to be very hard to cook the cauliflower on a wooden board and a knife. You may say, okay, well, I put the subject on the board and I'll stir it with the knife. But when you put that on the fire, the board catches on fire also. So unless you wanted to make baked cauliflower, then it would be very hard to, it won't work. At the same time, you can't take your karai and lid and then chop up the cauliflower. You could do that, of course, but it's not going to be refined. So each stage has its tools. And therefore it has special terminologies for that. You know, you have a counter and a knife, a grinder, you know. But when you're cooking, you don't have those. You have karais, and you have pots and spoons and lids, you know, and fire and adjusting knobs for that. So it's different. And you're not going to use those things to serve. You're not going to take the completed preparation, plunk it back on the counter, and then take that wooden board and then with the knife come and, you know, okay, 20 people, divide it up and then put it on the edge of the board and slide it off into everybody's plate. And you're not going to do like that. You have buckets and other kinds of spoons. And these spoons are different from the ones you cooked with. So like this, each stage is going to have, so you can get into these fine points and get it, but the trick is to know what's the principle there, you know. In other words, in all of these things, there's something that is supporting the cauliflower, right? You go to the market, then you put it into your basket. You come back, you know, you put it in the pot and wash it. You put it on the counter, it supports it. Then the pot supports it. Then the deity's plate supports it. Then the bucket supports it. Then you put it on a person's plate, that supports it. Then the stomach supports it. That support is all the way through. But that support came in the form of a plastic bag, a basket, a wooden counter, you know, a brass karai, you know, some kind of whatever plate, or bell metal bowl, then a leaf plate, and then your stomach. So now one who can see the connection between all those items sees devotional service. So this is the problem that comes up, is that someone's talking about the cooking side, and then someone's going, no, but I mean, we kept the cauliflower in a basket, but they can't tell that the basket and the karai are doing the same work. They can't tell. Just like the knife, the spoon, and the kunti and the sabji, the spoon for serving, and your hands when you're eating are doing the same work. They can't see that. So therefore they think it's different things and it's so confusing, and they get to know that when you understand it's the same thing, just depending upon what angle you're approaching, therefore you give it this definition. Then devotional service comes together. That's the meaning of when you understand the reservoir, all the small ponds are included. So you understand all these various aspects, the principles, you know the whole thing. You know, you may not be an expert cook, but you can tell someone the principles of cooking. You know, just like someone who actually knows the shastras properly, even though they don't know astrology, they know the principles behind it. Right? I mean, what's the principles behind it? Okay, there's this planet, this house, this thing. Get into a whole, you ask anyone who it is. It'll be very complicated like that. Technical. Unless you know the science, you can't run it. But someone who understands Bhagavatam understands that according to Krishna's arrangement and control of the universe, according to the three modes, he's controlling all the people on this planet through the nine planets, the Navagrahas. They are individual persons who have their own nature, and that nature has been given to them by the Supreme Lord. And according to their nature, they're going to control you. They're only going to control you in areas of their interest and their ability. according to their nature, and Krishna has given them that nature. So they're not going to act differently. And us controlled by the modes are not going to act differently. So that's actually what's going on in astrology. Astronomy is just where they're situated according to the levels of consciousness in that. The sun god, the moon god, all these different things. Rahu, why he's like he is. Right? Like Rahu, for example. Yeah, that's enough. We won't get into that. But it's, so it's like that's the principle. So you know the principles, all these things are contained. You maybe don't know how to exactly say what's in which house and what's in what that look, but you know the basic principles. And with a little study of that, comes up. Something that Bhagavatam gives, a little bit of astrology here and there. It gives astronomy very nicely. And astrology also tells here and there. This astrology is just a support. The astronomy is the main useful science, because that tells you when's Ekadasi, when's Janmashtami, when's all these things. Astrology is for, you know your marriage, or different things like that, or you know you want to know if you're going to get rich or when you're going to get rich, and like that. It's more for materialistic kind of things. Like that. But the sacrifice aspect of it is astronomy. You know, even you want to do a samskara for your child or this or that, because that's prescribed duties, it's sacrifice. Astronomy does that. But so that's very nicely explained in Bhagavatam, because that's directly connected with sacrifice. Astrology, not so direct. You can connect it. But and a little bit's given there. Different charts are given. And told the qualities of what they have, this and that, and because of this, you know, there's a whole chart given for Pariket Maharaj. And after Yudhishthira listens to that and hears it, he's satisfied. This person is going to be able to run the kingdom. So then, when Arjuna comes back from Dwarka and doesn't have good news, and Yudhishthira's seeing bad signs, he understands time for us to go. And then, the Pandavas entire time. So that is the only use of it. Just understand, okay, things are bad. Kali Yuga is starting. Krishna is gone. I've seen the bad omens, right? Because that's also, you know, a branch. Shakuna, it's called. I've seen the bad omens, like that. And Pariket has a good chart, he can do, just qualify people to train him, maybe. So that's its use, and it gives a little bit of the direction on how to understand what's its purpose and how it's used, and some of it. And then if you want to know the details and become an astrologer, astronomer like that, you go to those shastras, you go to that small well and get those techniques. But at the big well, you can get the purposes of all of them. But the small well, you can't necessarily understand what is its real purpose. I mean, most astrologers today, probably you find very few actually understand the gods at the other end of their science. If you take any astrological scripture, it'll start with God, the creation, then, you know, all the planets being put into place, all the different personalities in the planets, then, you know, coming down to the Japatis, this, that, till it gets to us sitting here on this planet here, then it starts telling the relationships. Right? It puts in the elements first, so the elements means you have to have the creation, the personalities running the planet, and us here. Then the relationships between us and them. Like that. And then, what do you do about it? But they don't understand that the goal is Krishna. They miss that. Many know, but there's many nowadays who don't know. It's nice, it's auspicious. So the whole point is that they know that, follow that science, will do it for Krishna, and understand the whole thing, how it works. You know, it's direct connection. Then it becomes also part of sacrifice. Then it becomes good. But if you can't do that, you just go to the, you leave the big pond, big reservoir, and go to the small pond, there's no glory. Pandits, there's millions of them out there. You know, we have a few devotees learn Sanskrit, a few this, a few that, and they all bloop and go away. There's no glory. You know, there's millions of people who know Sanskrit, even speak Sanskrit. No glory. You've left the great reservoir and gone to the small well. Okay, so you're a big guy at the small well. You're nobody at the reservoir. That is, this is one difference. A Brahman, just in nature, a Brahman would rather be one of 50,000 other Brahmins at the best king's court than be the big Brahman at a small king's court. While a Kshatriya would rather be the king of a small kingdom where he's totally in control than be one of the you know, cogs in the royalty, you know, administration under a big king. It's a difference because material desire is more. It's the difference. One of many differences. Thank you. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Bhagavad Gita ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jāyate Gaura ki.